Brothers and sisters, our first reading today came from the book of the prophet Habakkuk. Habakkuk wrote at a time when the Babylonian Empire was growing in power, shortly before the Babylonians would ransack and capture Israel. As he looks around the world around him, he sees this nefarious people, and he realizes that they're getting stronger. He knows that they pose a real threat to the Israelites, to God's people. And so he asks, "How long, O Lord? I cry out, but you do not listen. I cry violence, but you do not intervene." Although these words were written some 2,600 years ago, they seem no less applicable to our world today. This past week, I encountered someone who is ready to give up on God because of the way in which God seemingly turns a blind eye to the violence in our world. And certainly this person would not be the first person to feel this way. We can look around our world and we see powers like North Korea and Iran rising and becoming an increasing threat. And we may ask, "Lord, don't you care that they're getting stronger?" We can look at the situation in Syria and, much like Habakkuk, cry out, "Violence," only to find that God doesn't intervene. And even in our own nation, we see random acts of violence, even in places that are as sacred as our schools and our capital, nonetheless. And we, like the prophet, ask, "Why do you let me see this ruin? Why must I look at misery?" God responded to the prophet by saying, "This vision still has time, presses on to fulfillment, and will not disappoint." Essentially, God was telling Habakkuk to be patient and to have faith. Now, to us human beings, this is probably one of the most unsatisfying responses, because we want action, we want results, and we want them now. And this attitude is pervasive throughout our culture. We see it everywhere. I mean, think of sports, for example, and how impatient fans become when their team is not producing results. Notre Dame has been talking about winning another national championship in football for over 20 years. Enough already. Just feel the team that can win. When it comes to more serious issues, we're even less patient. So naturally, we don't want to hear about God's long-ranging plan. We don't want to hear that God has a plan that will work out in the end. We want God to start acting on these issues. We want him to respond to the things that we bring to him, and we want him to do so now. Friends, let me suggest that this impatient response, while natural, demonstrates that we have things backwards. Such a response views us as the masters and God as the cosmic butler whose sole purpose is to serve us as we see fit. The corrective to this attitude is seen in our gospel today. Our gospel passage takes place immediately after Jesus warned his apostles of two daunting realities. One, that the temptation to sin will surely come, and two, that the apostles had the responsibility to rebuke sin whenever they saw it. And I say these are daunting realities because facing temptation is difficult enough without adding the responsibility to correct everybody who you see in error. Upon hearing what awaits them, the apostles respond, "Increase our faith." See, this is the proper attitude to adopt when facing the realities of the world. The apostles didn't cry out and insist that God fix everything now. They didn't give God instructions, ordering him to alter the situation so that they wouldn't face temptation to sin, or so that they wouldn't have to rebuke sinners. Rather, they ask him to increase their faith. Jesus affirms that this is the right response, for he notes that faith, even in the smallest of quantities, can produce great and awesome works. So the apostles are wise in asking him to increase their faith. But this isn't just the request for faith that Jesus is affirming. Jesus also is affirming that there's an attitude, a worldview that's implied in this request. We're God, and not us, is the center of the universe. By informing them that they're merely unprofitable servants, Jesus reminds the apostles that they are to be people who serve God, not people who expect God to serve them. You know, our modern sensibilities often miss this fact. We tend to often treat God as if he were an equal. So naturally, after doing our part, after doing our labor, after tending the sheep all day, we expect God to do something for us by putting on his apron and waiting on us. See, the reality is that we're not God's equals. For the apostles, this meant that once they had finished tending to the sheep, that is, taking care of the church, they weren't to rest, but they were to return to the Master, to God, and to serve him as well. And this same dynamic is true not only for the apostles and their successors, the bishops, it applies to every Christian. Once we've completed our work of caring for the world by bringing the good news of Christ to those who are outside the walls of this building, our expectation shouldn't be that God will now sit and wait on us, hand and foot. Rather, we should return to God, ready to serve him as well. For as Christ notes, everything we do, no matter how great and noteworthy it may seem, is merely what we're obliged to do. Therefore, God doesn't owe us anything in return. We are his servants, after all, not the other way around. Discipleship demands that we become servants of God. This, of course, means that as disciples, we do not give instructions to God, but rather ask God, "What must I do to help carry out your plan?" And that simple move demonstrates that our faith isn't in ourselves. It's not in our own ideas, but rather it's in God and his plan. It shows that we trust that whatever God may ask us to do, no matter how tedious, will forward his plan, and it will profit the world for salvation. And therefore, it's incumbent upon us to ask for an increase in faith so that we may understand and accept God's will and participate in his plan for salvation. You know, one way we can do this is by taking seriously the precepts of the church through which God teaches us, rather than dismissing them because they don't serve us in the manner that we would like. This month, for example, the church has asked us in the United States to pray for and celebrate a month where we respect human life. And I encourage everybody here in this church today to ask God, how is it that I can help spread the good news about human life in the world? And to be clear, this isn't simply about abortion, although that certainly is the biggest life issue we face today. But it's about people realizing that every human being is made in God's image, and every human being must be revered as such. You know, think of how the world would look if people actually understood that fact and acted upon it. There would be no bullying in schools. There'd be no war, no abortion, no euthanasia, no starvation, no slavery, because every human being would be treated with the dignity due to God. Revering others as being made in God's image is what leads us to serve one another. And as people who have faith in God, we are all called to serve not only God, but one another as well. As people who are bound to Christ through the Eucharist, service of others and respect for human life isn't something that's optional. It's essential to our identity, just as it was essential to Christ's mission. Service isn't a bonus thing that we Christians do as a way of earning extra credit points with God. It isn't the icing on the cake. Rather, it's an essential component of loving and serving God. It's the cake, not the icing on top. Brothers and sisters, peace to you and to all of God's unprofitable servants.